the tensions were so great in Saigon that it was really untenable.
It was for me, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I remember one time very, I guess it was fairly early, I was wondering about following up something and you said, no, it'll be better later.
Right. That was with regard to my difficulties with the language, xenophobia with the teachers, of having this, them speaking English using inappropriate intonation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which was a difficulty. It was a real difficulty for me.
Yeah, because you said you wanted to wait on something before,
yes,
which
right.
fit more appropriately.
That was it. That's what I was thinking about at that time. Right.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it might have been some of these five or seven things we enumerated.
No.
Or if we might have gone on and there's something else to pick up, you know, from the earlier time. But let's see. Let me pause for a second here. Moving on to another question, though, do you have any specific relations with the USAID folks?
Did I then in Vietnam?
Yes.
Personally, I had almost no contact with the USAID people.
Okay. They were generally less in, you know, for education people.
Right, because my contacts really were through IVS.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had contacts with the military to some extent, but not the USAID.
What would you have?
Military because of the transportation and the.
Okay, and the PX things, but not work related.
Not work related.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I thought you were trying to. That there was a work related connection as there in parallel with AID.
No.
Okay.
No, I had actually very little contact work related with Americans there.
Mm hmm.
In fact, almost none. Except for the IVS people.
You know, certainly you were seeing the drastic buildup of the American forces.
Right.
When you returned, finding that nice cushy job and making a salary and everything like that, did you do anything in a public sense about, you know, to acquaint Americans with the situation in Vietnam that you had seen?
I would say no.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I did some anti-war protesting back when I was at Berkeley. That was before.
Uh-huh.
I was involved in some anti-war protest later on.
Uh-huh.
In San Francisco in 1969.
Okay.
But that was the Cambodian invasion.
That would have been 70.
Yeah, it was
May, 70, May of
right,
70.
No, May of 70, okay. Right.
Yeah. About the, well, you go to Vietnam fully prepared in the sense of having the conscientious objector background.
Yes, right.
Plus, you just tell me now that while at Berkeley you weren't just in the lab, but that you were also taking part in whatever they had, whether it was teach-ins or full marches or whatever.
Marches, that sort of thing, right.
Yeah.
Picketing, right.
Yeah. Did what you see in Vietnam, two-part question, how much did the activities at Berkeley before you went, do you think in retrospect influenced your interpretation of things in Vietnam when you saw them? And what in Vietnam did you see that may have altered some of the things that you thought you would find when you were first at Berkeley?
I guess I would say my activities in Berkeley, which were certainly not in any leadership role whatsoever,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and were relatively relatively minor in the greater scheme of things, had very little effect on my observations in Vietnam, okay. I would say. And I'd say I went into Vietnam pretty ignorant, and I read a book, History of Vietnam, Vietnam Between Two Truces, I guess it is.
Oh, yeah.
And so I knew a little something about it, some about the history and so forth, but I went in pretty ignorant. I would say that I saw a lot less of what was going on in Vietnam with regard to the war than some other people did who were in IBS, in part because I, first of all, didn't venture out in the countryside as much as some people did. And I didn't have quite some of the graphic experiences that some people had of seeing how the military went about their way in Vietnam. And, I heard people tell stories of how they dropped grenades into the wells around when, I guess for fun, they'd drop it in something so the grenade wouldn't go off and drop it down the well so it'd go off, I don't know, a day or two or a week later. And that sort of thing. But, I heard much more gruesome, horrible stories about what people did, how the military behaved there. My main contact with that aspect was actually having the ground shake from B-52, from the big bombs from B-52, or seeing the flashes of the light, or seeing occasionally tracer bullets going overhead, or shells with phosphorescent coating so you could see them.
Yeah, right.
But that was really my contact with the war. I was never around when there was any close fighting, never in any really military confrontational situation.
It's kind of interesting that you could be so close.
Yes.
And yet put into something of a cocoon.
Right. Well, it's a bit like, I lived in Kansas for 10 years and never saw a tornado, even though I saw the aftermath of tornadoes quite a bit. So this is a bit like that. I mean, what I saw, what I did see was flying over free strike zones where the countryside had been turned into something that looked like the moon.
Yeah.
It was that was very dramatic. It was solid craters. So that's the sort of thing I did see, and you can see defoliation where you can see the ground where it used to be forest. It's not as good as a cocoon, but at least there was a buffer zone between where I was and where the military were actually doing the fighting.
Yeah, cocoon may have been too absolute a kind of analogy.
I think a cocoon would be kind of snug and safe.
You didn't feel that way.
Safe, right?
Yeah.
When the airplane takes off and circles over the city in order to get high enough above bullet range so that you can't be hit from the ground, it's not entirely a safe area.
Yeah.
But in fact, I was never in a plane that was shot at, as far as I know. Some people had that experience, finding bullet holes in the plane when they landed.
You didn't even see the bullet holes in the plane.
No.
They must have just taken off just straight up.
That's right.
Don't eat before you fly.
Right. Exactly.
Gosh, yeah. No, I remember some landings, but that's only flying into Hong Kong Airport, where they have to be careful of the mountains.
Okay.
And so come in at a rather odd angle and getting used to that and losing your lunch almost. Okay, so how would you say that this IVS experience then affected you?
I would say actually very little.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it had very little impact other than certainly something I remember, something I tell people about occasionally, but it doesn't have a whole lot of, some emotional impact. Obviously, I can tell in speaking with you that there's some lingering emotional impact about what I found to be psychologically, not quite devastating, but very trying situation, I would say. But
Well, you're describing your return to Hawaii as a week-long sleep.
That's right, yes.
I mean, that says a bundle right there.
Yeah, I suppose it does.
I mean, you don't sleep if you've had, a good time.
Right.
And a restful time. I mean, you're going through a depressurization.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't have called, I wouldn't call it a good time. It was an experience which I'm not actually sorry to have had. Seeing as I got through it all, okay?
Yeah.
But I don't actually see it as being good to have had, but not necessarily a good experience, you know, something you have trying experience which you say, well, this has been character building. I don't have any feeling about it all about Vietnam.
Well, but you said it was still good to have had that experience. For what
reason? Just because of, I guess I'm interested in seeing how the world works. Having been abroad, for me, the two most interesting experiences were Singapore and Japan, which were very positive. But also, I have some understanding of what Vietnam's like, with knowing Vietnamese language is something I've always liked. Having some understanding of what third world country or primitive is not the right thing, an actually quite interesting high civilized country in the wartime. I mean, it's something, you know, that's not, it's knowledge, and I guess I always sort of value knowledge, even if it's not necessarily very good for me.
Yeah, okay.
But I, as far as learning something, you know, about the greater scheme of living, I learned nothing, I would say. Yeah, I learned nothing. And maybe because it's probably in part because I wasn't terribly inclined to be exploratory over there. I was kind of in a holding pattern or a retracted mode, you know, trying to sort of survive.
Okay, yeah, right. One point, I forget exactly when, and I'm going to try to quote you, and if I might get the words wrong, but I think at least in a paraphrasing, I'll be right, is that you thought that IVS had pretty much sold out, or perhaps sold its soul.
So it sold to the devil, I think, is what I said.
Okay.
USA.
Yeah, yeah. One of the biggest, yeah, and I'm just, this is a little bit spin before we get to the question. One of the biggest problems that I've talked to both Don and Jay Worrell, both of whom you know,
right,
is the refugee program. I mean, here you are, you're taking care of people that the military is making refugees of,
right,
for their military strategic goals,
right,
very clearly. And one of the reasons that they can do this with alacrity is they know that there are some folks who will take care of them. So, but, you know, the responses that I got from Don and from Jay were somewhat similar. Don's just today said in one particular instance, and I forget all the details that he just told me, but it seemed quite apparent that whether IVS volunteers were going to help the refugees or not, that they were going to become refugees because Westmoreland or whoever was going to order the strikes.
Right.
And Jay, meanwhile, said, well, you know, this is something, you know, that they debated almost ad nauseum. But they finally decided that because these people do exist, that helping them at least on a one-to-one basis is better than turning their back on them. So there are, it's very complex, you know, and it's very heartrending. Do you see any way that IVS might have been able to operate without selling its soul?
Not while they had a USAID contract. I mean, I see, for me, the stark contrast was between us, the IVS volunteers, and the Quakers. Because the Quakers, they were flying Air Vietnam. And they were living, I'm not sure exactly where their living quarters were in Hue. But they were living much more with the people, and it was clear that they were acting independently of the military in a way that we were certainly not. And so I could see the Quakers being there and trying to do the best they could for refugees and others, and has a completely different flavor for me than what IVS was doing.
Okay, so it really was the link up with AID rather than the moral conundrum of how do we deal with the refugee situation that we can't
right.
staunch.
Right.
But we simply put on the Band-Aid, but maybe putting on a Band-Aid ain't a bad thing.
Right, that's right.
But not if the Band-Aid comes purchased with the shaking hands.
That's right, because it was clear the USA was just as much of a U.S. policy as an arm of U.S. policy as a military. And so we just had the IVS people doing the work for USA.
Yeah, at one point, and because I've been seeing, unfortunately, too many people, and in the morning it might be someone who served in Laos, in the afternoon or evening it might be someone who was in Vietnam.
Right.
Some things are getting a little fuzzy, and I'm going to have to hopefully take a listen to the tapes again. But there was talk, and perhaps it was both countries, that perhaps if we could reduce the AID funding from 100% to 50% or 49%, then we would be okay.
Maybe.
Okay, so
I don't know. I mean, in another country, it might have been okay.
All right, you need to link up with AID.
Sure.
Okay.
Right, because I think, you know, Peace Corps Force was U.S. government program, and I thought it was a great program. Way of using our money well, for several points of view. I mean, gives you and other people experience of being abroad, living abroad, and you bring that back with you. And, gives folks abroad a chance to see Americans doing something other than being the rich, ugly Americans, although I know sometimes, even as volunteers, we aren't entirely divorced from that image.
No, we're certainly not. Right. No, I told Mark something that Mark is, you know, I like to talk to him. I like to meet people. Mark is much more gregarious than I am, if you can imagine. I'm sure you can, yeah, because I'm not, you know, that bubbly. But I told him one thing about one time what was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Philippines said about Filipinos, and he just was unable to speak. So I know that even Peace Corps can say some incredible things, you know. And that we are not immune, and certainly do not, you know, have all the answers, or, you know, work in the best. I'm beginning to ramble here, but, you know, okay. So perhaps it was simply the war situation and the way in which AID itself had been linked up to the war situation.
That's for me was the problem. It was a relationship between AID, the U.S. purpose in Vietnam, and IVS.
Yeah. No, I know Don, for example, was always, he said he was always concerned, you know, about that relationship, and always had to try to resist as best he could the pressure to become a team player.
Okay.
You know? Especially because the team player wasn't just a greater America team player, but a U.S. military team, you know, under a specific chain of command. Yeah. Okay, so I was wondering, you know, this line of my discourse, and with your response, sometimes I'm only giving you enough to say, huh, yes, 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 was to clarify whether you meant working with the U.S. government at any time is wrong.
Right. That's not what I meant.
But that's not what you meant.
No,
it was only in this one particular situation.
In the military situation, in a war situation.
Okay.
And in particular, this Vietnam War situation.
Right. Then all we have to do is try to figure out what other kinds of war situations, if there are some, where an NGO working with AID might work. that's speculation.
Yeah, I don't know whether it would ever work with him. It might.
Yeah, yeah.
At least I'm not ruling out.
Yeah, not dismissing of it, but this example does not make one very hopeful.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Have I covered a lot? Have I covered everything fairly thoroughly?
I think we've covered most of what I have to say, at least.
Okay.
I'm sure that because I was, there are lots of things I didn't see, which others might have,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the personal relationship between Americans and the Vietnamese. There are plenty of other things that I know only by hearsay, and which I, there's no virtue in talking about it.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty well covered my experiences over there.
Okay. Good enough. Well, then I thank you. It's been very nice meeting you. Don did tell me I'm going to turn this off now.
All
goodbye.
Right.